irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
That you would be, and I am Michael Sterling, and I'm a year older.
Hey, happy birthday, Michael. Was it a good birthday?
It was a great birthday.
What'd you get me?
What'd I get you?
Yes. Is that not how it works? Do people not get me presents on their birthday?
I think so. I heard that.
I've been trying to start that tradition. Nobody seems to like that. Yeah, I've been trying to start that for years now.
Well, I will think better of it next year. All right.
Happy birthday. Did you have a good time doing
anything
special? I did.
Yeah, with some friends, went up to the beautiful Castaways restaurant in the hills of Burbank.
Very nice.
Have you either been there?
Oh, yes.
Yes?
Oh,
no, I have not. It's beautiful, beautiful. Wow. Take somebody special there or special occasions. It overlooks the whole San Fernando Valley, and it's just stunning. Yeah.
Wow,
the food's
great.
It's pricey, but, it's not meant for anything but special occasions.
Right, a good birthday celebration place.
Absolutely.
Sounds great.
Yeah, so thanks for asking.
Great. Well, shall we go ahead and thank our sponsors, Michael?
I think we should.
Let's
absolutely. Do that. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed, and we are certainly today, Andrew, having a huge show.
Would you say operatic?
I would.
Huge, Michael?
I think that would fit the bill, yeah.
Indeed, no doubt about it.
And so are the laughs. They're going to be operatic as well.
That would be very safe to say, because today we are discussing a fun and exciting new production of La Cenerentola. I have to say this again. Cenerentola?
Very close.
Oh, my goodness.
The C is going to be a
Cenerentola.
Cenerentola.
A version of the Cinderella story produced by Center Stage Opera here in the San Fernando Valley.
That we are, Michael. And we are, of course, very fortunate today because we have two guests in studios to tell us more about it. Let's go ahead and bring them in. You've heard their voices a little bit. We welcome Jerry Brown and Brandon Lloyd.
How are you doing, guys?
The audience goes crazy.
Man, you guys know how to make a tenor feel welcome. Already got applauses going. I love
You're
it.
You're welcome. Just like a tenor. What can I say?
Well, Mike, I tell you, we've got some good stuff going on today, and obviously we're going to talk about this a little bit more here coming up. Do you have anything interesting going on in your life?
Well, sadly, no.
No.
No. It's always full of something happening here. I think this week, though, was, we're talking about the birthday. Here's how the birthday day started.
Okay.
Got up with. I have two beautiful children who are beagles, actually,
right. Furry but cute.
A little girl and a little boy, and we're in a 2-year relationship right now because I adopted them, but they're the world to me. And the little girl, I always know where she is because she's at my feet. So I turned around and said good morning to her, and her name is Riley. And Cooper got up, and I started opening the house up, and then I turned around and looked at Riley. And she had a huge bubble in the corner of her eye, which is something that I later learned as I, picked her up and went into the car and dashed over to the veterinary and to see what this was all about. And it's called cherry eye.
Huh.
And I'm going to say, I wanted to tell this story because a lot of people don't know this, and I certainly didn't. It's specific to animals and dogs in particular, and it's something that has to do with an inflammation of the tissues that are underneath the eye, the bottom part of the eye inside. Huh. And when it gets infected, it blows up. So the tissue blows up, and the red, of course, is caused by the blood that's in the tissue.
Right.
And it's a little scary looking because in the process of maybe 30 minutes, it doubled its size.
Mm. Wow.
So we get to the vet, and he says, yes, this is what it is. And I said, I have heard from other people that this is something that requires surgery, but there's some other preliminary steps that might be able to resolve the problem. And I said, such as you rubbing this tissue back into the eye and tucking it under the skin.
Ugh.
And he said, yes, that is something that we try to do.
Wow.
And he said, to avoid the surgery. And he said, so that's what I'm going to do, and then we'll give drops to you to take home. And if the drops you know, correct the situation and we won't have to do this surgery. He said, but I will tell you that the odds are not very good that that will happen and that we'll probably end up having to do that. But who knows?
Oh.
That's going to be the plan, of course.
Is she looking okay, though? Is she comfortable?
Well, he did that. He tucked it back in. And it was weird to watch him do it.
Yeah. Right. I've been trying to do that with my gut for about 6 years now. Just tuck it in. Tighten
at least
that belt
under your belt.
Well, I feel for you, Michael, because I always love your Facebook pictures of your dogs. They're so
gorgeous. Thank you. Thank you, Brandon. That's how the day started.
Yeah.
And then I due to that, I had to cancel a haircut that I had been desperately needing to have.
Right.
Couldn't get my guy on the reschedule.
Oh, no.
So I went later in the afternoon and said to this guy, and I'm very particular about my hair because I have some. And
let's not get too personal.
Yeah, you still got more than me, and I'm younger, so you're good.
And I said to the guy, please, I said, this is important to me. It's just take an eighth of an inch off the top. And take this much off on the sides and make it shorter, blah, blah, blah. This is what it came out
to
be.
It looks great, Michael. Come on.
I look like a used Q-tip. Come on. I mean, it's like ridiculous. My goodness.
Oh, Michael. Well, I got to tell you, that is a birthday with a baseball bat to the side of the head to start out with.
Yeah.
Well said.
Did they get better for dinner at least?
Yes, it
good.
Did. Of course.
Good.
It
at least
did.
It had a nice ending.
And yes, it was very beautiful. So I appreciated that. But, you know, I hate to start a day off like that. And I hate to be consumed like something that's so personal as my hair. It's
of
so
course.
Silly, you know?
But it is something we all have to deal with. You got to look at yourself every day. And you
exactly.
want to feel good about yourself.
Exactly.
So, my
exactly.
goodness.
Yes, so thanks for asking. And you, sir, went to the theater and you saw?
I did. Well, in fact, I visited a number of theaters, including a movie theater this week where I took my kids to see Pete's Dragon.
And how was it?
You know, it was really very good. I tell you, Disney with these new live-action remakes is doing such a good job. And while obviously we support the live arts here in California, we also know that, you know, so many of our artists take jobs on the technical side and in front of the camera to do film and television here in our town. And, boy, it was great to see so much good work going on. My kids loved it. They both had a whole lot of excitement after it, so much so that I was like, okay, we're going to go to the park and run off some of this energy. But it was a really good, positive remake of a greatly loved story. And then I went to a theater that has become one of my favorites, and I think a lot of people around L.A. can say that. Last night I attended the opening of A View from the Bridge at the Amundsen.
Nice.
And,
lovely.
You know, that was, of course, the opening night, and it was fascinating to sit there and there's a great saying in oratory that says, a great speech is not measured by whether they stand or not at the end, but by what energy they stand up with. Mm. And that audience at the end of A View from the Bridge rose to their feet with a passion that you knew they'd seen something really special. Mm. And for me, that's the measure of great theater, is how much emotion can you evoke over the course of a night.
Preach.
And just to talk a little bit more about it, you'll see this is, I believe this, I may be mistaken about this, but I think this started at the Vic and then eventually went to Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
The director is an amazing director named Ivo van Hove, I believe from Amsterdam. An amazing director who did some really quality work with this. This is a period drama by Arthur Miller, for those who don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Very much in the style of On the Waterfront, that sort of thing. And of course, with Miller's other influence, you can see a lot of Death of a Salesman in this as well. But it is fascinating to watch as this story unfolds in a very different setting than you've ever seen it before.
Is it a capsule version of the plot? What is that?
Well, so it focuses on migrant workers coming to work on the docks in the early 1900s and how the Italian neighborhoods needed to hide these people to allow their family members to have a chance to send money back to the desolate economies in Italy and other places. And it focuses particularly on two brothers, two very different brothers who come to work, and a niece gets involved, and it's a love triangle that turns out to be really emotionally impactful. The protagonist of the story is Eddie, who's a hardworking family man dealing with a changing age and some really difficult coming-of-age things in himself as he kind of hits a midlife crisis. And the performances, and the measure of great acting is very different for each person. But if you just simplify it to how much you involve yourself in the character you're playing, every single one of these actors hit it, which you would expect at the Amundsen.
Mm-hmm.
I think something you might not expect, though, is how relevant this antiquated story is today.
Of course.
It's obviously, we've had tons of change in the last 50 years, but when you watch this, you realize that at our core, we're all the same. And it was done in a very operatic fashion, as a matter of fact. There was certainly a over-the-top feeling to so many scenes, including a climactic chair scene that absolutely had me in awe. I watched as not only the lighting and the set, which were very innovative, but more than that, the heart, the truth to the heart of the characters was realized 60 years later in a way that was absolutely relevant to me sitting here in 2016. And I don't think we can say that about very much straight plays in LA. I think a musical can be updated in a lot of fun ways and that sort of thing. But to do it with a period piece like that, I think this director has become a voice of a generation the same way Arthur Miller did all those years ago.
Who are the stars of this?
Well, so it stars a number of people. Danny Brinstock is amazing, and Alex Essela, Andreas Nichols. There's some amazing people in this, but I mean, literally the cast across the entire way was amazing. Eddie is played by Frederick Weller, who is truly amazing, and Catherine was played by Catherine Combs. It should be said that everybody in this cast was so connected. It was an ensemble cast, and individually they did such a great job, but the connection between them, they're trapped in a box when you go to see this, and to see that connection build over time, it is what directing is supposed to be about, creating ensemble that tells the story with no stop. Another cool thing is they have seats on the stage at the Amundsen to make it a three-quarters scene. And you don't have to sit on the stage for people who like, I really don't want to be up there. But you can actually buy a ticket and say, hey, I've been on stage at the Amundsen if you'd like to, young actors. So.
That's clever. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very well done. And I think this production has received a lot of accolades and it's deserved them.
Good for you. It sounds like a great night out at the theater. Always fun to be downtown.
Absolutely. We should say that too, Michael. I mean, the Music Center is one of the easiest places to get in and out of. I've never had a problem. Of course, you know Brandon because of Disney Concert Hall right across the way that you've played at a number of times, correct?
Yeah, I'm very spoiled. I get to sing with the LA Master Chorale. I get to work with some of the best conductors in the world, including Gustavo Dudamel. And that hall, you know, and before I started working with them, I got to travel all over the world and perform at places like Carnegie Hall, the Salzburg Music Festival. And I'm here to tell you, the Walt Disney Concert Hall should be a must-see place for visitors when they come to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I think it is a travesty if you do not go and attend a concert at the Walt Disney Concert Hall during your visit to LA, because it is acoustically one of the best I've ever heard, if not the best. I mean, it's right up there with Carnegie.
That's great to hear.
And then, like you said, at Amundsen, it's very easy. And they're all right next to each other. That's the beautiful thing. Yeah. And that's really needed in Los Angeles.
Well, and it's something, too, we can say that's interesting is, you know, you drive downtown, and, of course, this show runs until the 16th, so get out and see it. There's a very rare chance to see that entertaining of a straight play that's not done very often anymore. But you drive down there, you pay $9 to park in their garage. Yeah. There's plenty of parking, and then escalators straight up. And it's really a fun place to walk around. Downtown is becoming really fun again.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of fun places to eat around
and some,
there, too.
Yeah, great restaurants.
And
there.
The new Broad Art Museum is incredible.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just, yeah, absolutely.
I haven't seen the art museum over at the Broad. Is it attached to the Broad or it's part of the
Broad? It's part of the Broad Foundation, I believe, and it's right next to the Walt Disney Concert Hall. And just
thinking Santa Monica.
Oh, yeah, no worries. And it's right next to it. It's a gorgeous, unusual-looking Star Trek building, just like the Walt Disney Concert Hall, but very different. And the art pieces, from what I've seen from my friends who showed me, it's incredible. Like, there's a giant table, so you're looking up at the table like you're in Alice in Wonderland. It's
wow.
It's really interesting. And it's also another must-see destination now, because the wait list, you have to wait, I think, at least a month even.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Really?
So, oh, yeah.
Wow.
Well, so long and the short of it is you have until October 16th to get out to the Amundsen, see this amazing show, and rediscover downtown, because you can't do better anywhere in the country than going downtown LA and seeing some really amazing theater, great acting, but more than that, a great introduction to a piece that needs to be seen. It talks about the human condition in a very unusual way.
Wonderful. Well, I'm so happy you had a good night out at the theater.
Yeah. Shall we talk some opera?
I think so. Oh, yeah. Yes, we should.
Let's bring our guest in, Michael.
Hell yes. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us in studio today is a man who has served as general director of Center Stage Opera since 2010. In addition to overseeing the general operations of the opera company, he is also an accompanist and master of ceremonies for Center Stage Opera's Amici della Musica.
Musica, yes.
Musica, okay. Dinner and song series and recital programs. A familiar face to CSO audiences and fans, he also speaks and accompanies singers as part of Center Stage Opera's Opera Tree and their educational programs. He earned his Bachelor of Music degree from Pomona College in 1971. He is an ordained rabbi, and we are thrilled to have him with us here today on State of the Arts. Please welcome Jerry Brown. There you are.
Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome, Jerry. Welcome.
Sir, you are a busy man.
Yeah,
there
especially a lot of right now with 2 days to go before the show goes
right.
up. Yes, it's a little busy.
But, how long do you rehearse for a show like this?
We try and keep the rehearsal period very compact and very intense because, you know, we have performers that come in from out of town. People have other commitments and so on. So typically we will start the formal rehearsals about a month before the show.
Hmm.
And we rehearse typically 6 days a week during the day on weekends and in the evenings on weekdays.
Mm-hmm. And the performance space is located at the Reseda High School here in the San Fernando Valley.
Yes.
And it's the Performing Arts Center.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that. How large is that venue?
Well, if filled to capacity, it's over 1,200 seats.
Really?
So it's a big,
wow.
big space. We just moved in there last year when we entered into a partnership agreement with the high school. We were looking for a high school, particularly a high school that had a high proportion of lower-income families. Part of our mission as a company, first and foremost, of course, is excellent performances, productions, but right behind that is to serve underserved communities, and especially when it comes to performing mm-hmm. arts, number one on that list is people that can't afford a ticket.
Yeah.
So we bring support for the artistic faculty to the school. We try and involve the kids as apprentices. They can apprentice anything that we do, from crewing the stage to ushering to apprenticing the conductor or the lead role in the opera. They can sign up for these things.
Amazing.
And we bring, since this is a school where 80% of the kids are on public assistance, we bring the students and their immediate family to the show at no cost.
Wow.
Amazing. And what has the reception been by those people with regard to what you're doing?
We get some wonderful reactions. I had a student, she was a freshman, she came up and she just had this awestruck look after last year's performance of Così fan tutte, Mozart. And I said, how'd you like it? She said, it's the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And another, I wanted to hire her as a publicist. She's a lot better than I am. She came up and she said, it was like walking into a rainforest of music.
Oh,
the music
geez.
Surrounded wow. you on every side. And
wow, you know, how eloquent.
What do you say? Yes,
right?
Right. Absolutely. Well, then you know you're touching people if you get that kind of response from someone that young, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
There has been one drawback. Every once in a while, we run into people who say, oh, it's at a high school. Is it in the gym? Or, oh, it's at a high school. So it's a high school production.
Wow.
And needless to say, Center Stage Opera, this is our 12th season as a professional opera company with outstanding singers like the gentleman sitting next to me here,
oh,
Brandon.
Gosh.
and it is anything but the gym. The acoustics there, I think you'll agree after last night, are fabulous.
Yeah, I'm really big about the acoustics actually because it's live, but it's not too live. So it forces you as a singer, and this is really important that I tell as a young teacher to my young students, is that you have to learn elastic technique. You have to learn to listen to yourself. And not on what you hear, because the minute you focus on what you hear, that is when you start overcompensating and creating unnecessary tension.
Interesting.
And that's actually something I learned very deeply because of Michael Sterling over here, because I got to be in LA's Next Great Stage Star. And at that time, because I was working through that, it really affected my acting.
Wow.
And so I have to publicly thank Michael for the opportunity because of that opportunity, it was the beginning for me to begin working through that as a performer. And so that's why I find this so beautiful that I'm on this TV show, radio show, because it's such a full circle feeling now.
You know, it's interesting, Mike, so many people
Sweet
have gone
you,
through that.
Yeah.
I think so many people have gone through LA Stage Star, Next Great Stage Star, feel that way, Michael. I've heard that from a number of people.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's our
experience.
Mission, you know, is to try to deliver what it's like out there in the trenches of every, you know, so many of our contestants are right out of the universities and they have great training there, but they don't have the life training that's expected of them.
Exactly.
In an,
yeah.
Jerry, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought up your performance space, because I think that you're right. That can have a strange connotation when people hear that it's called the Rosita Performing Arts Center at the Rosita High School. But I'm curious, I mean, could you explain a little bit? You were telling me earlier, this is an amazing space that's just been renovated, perfect for a professional opera company.
It really is. We had been at another theater, which is certainly a very fine space here in the Valley. The stage here at the Performing Arts Center at Rosita High, big stage, lots of wing space. You can fly things in. Great lighting setup.
Brandon's laughing over here.
It's got a wonderful big space in front of the stage. It does not have a pit, but for an orchestra of the size that we usually use.
Which is around what?
Generally, it's a minimum of 20 pieces.
Wow.
It's very difficult to find a pit big enough, so we set up the orchestra right down in front,
yeah.
And there's lots of nice room for that, and then we set up a barrier around them to kind of wall them off from the audience a bit. But there's ample parking, including a separate parking lot for handicap parking. There's, as I said, not a step in the place because... to us, opera, well, it tends to be a little more mature taste, though we're trying to change that. So we have lots of seniors who come. And now they have handicap parking right behind the theater, no steps on the way to their seats. And we instituted something that we call wheelchair valet. One of our board members was able to secure several refurbished wheelchairs that were donated to the company. The kids from the junior ROTC at Rosita High have volunteered enthusiastically and in great numbers. And now, if you need assistance from your car, you pull up to the curb. There's a wheelchair waiting for you with a wonderful young man or woman who will wheel you to your seat and then pick you up at the conclusion.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It's a lot of fun.
Can I get that when I drop my kids off at school in the morning? Because getting out of that car every now and then, I almost don't make it up that hill.
Do you have a wheelchair that I don't know about?
Right. I could so use one. I tell you, I've hit the sad point now where I can hear my knees popping, you know, when I get out of bed. So it's interesting because you talk about, you know, this facility being wheelchair accessible, which is so important these days. But also, it's very conveniently located, is that correct?
Oh, yeah. It's on Kittredge Street, about three blocks east of Rosita Boulevard, and just literally a short walk west of Lindley. So it's right in the heart of the valley. It has everything from a performance point of view that you would ever hope for.
Yeah.
And especially for a company that, except when we do our Broadway shows, and we do Broadway shows, we don't use, of course, amplification because it's opera. Well, you stand on that stage and you can sit at the back of the theater, the very back of the theater, and the sound is glorious.
Wow.
So for us, it's a wonderful venue. We're delighted to be part of a school that is serving a community that is too often neglected, and they're a great staff and faculty there. We just had a meeting with the performing arts faculty, and we have lots and lots of plans for the future to involve the kids more and more in what we do.
Wow.
I just wanted to point out that it's all the bells and whistles here with this production. It's a 20-piece orchestra? Is that what you said?
20-piece orchestra, yes. Full costuming set, all the things that you would expect from, frankly, from a full opera production. And the critics have been very kind to us over the years. We get comments like, Center Stage Opera is truly one of the gems in the valley. Our production of Cozy had the reviewer telling folks that we are great admirers of LA Opera, and we collaborate with them in many ways, particularly on our annual vocal competition, where LA Opera has a permanent seat on our judges panel.
Fantastic.
And it will this year be, in fact, awarding their own LA Opera award. But the reviewer said, there's good news, Valleyites. You don't have to fight traffic on the 101 to see great opera anymore.
Exactly.
That's fantastic.
So to be compared to LA Opera, boy, that's something for us.
Well, should tell people that this is, of course, coming up on September 17th and 18th. Is that correct?
That's right. That's this weekend.
And you can call for tickets at 818-517-4102, or you can just visit centerstageopera.org.
And this production is made possible in part by a grant from the City of Los Angeles Department of Cultural Affairs.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And I wanted to ask, to that, that's a long process, I think, to get a grant from the city. How long did it actually take you until it all fell into place?
Well, it's interesting. It took us, in terms of preparing the grant and so on, because it was our first major grant submission, it took a couple of months of our really working on it, including an all-nighter that I hadn't pulled since I was in college. But deadlines are deadlines, you know.
I can't do those on a regular basis anymore. So,
but the nice thing that we were very pleased with is that I think this may be what you're referring to. It's not unusual that the first time you submit a grant, they say, thanks a lot, come back, here's what you might fix.
Right.
This was our first submission.
Oh, wow.
And we were delighted that they granted us a two-year grant. It is part of the funding for La Cenerentola. And it will then be applied next year to... another production, should we be fortunate enough to have a second grant approved.
Now, do you have to go through and have it submitted again?
Every 2 years.
Every 2 years. So you have
this year, the Department of Cultural Affairs was funded Così fan tutte in part, and then La Cenerentola this season, Così was last season, and we'll be applying for, next year's production will be The Elixir of Love, a new production by Dylan F. Thomas, our director, that I think is going to have particular appeal for young people, because this 1840 Italian opera, we are setting on a Valley High School campus circa 1980.
As someone's familiar with the story, that's hilarious.
It absolutely works.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely
good
works.
For him, bringing it into more contemporary times.
Fantastic.
Right?
Well, obviously, we're going to come back and talk a little more with Brandon here in a moment, but this sounds fantastic. Let's take a break into a quick live arts calendar.
Yeah,
does that sound
absolutely.
Good? Ladies and gentlemen, the Rubicon Theater presents Moonlight and Magnolias, the hilarious fly-to-the-wall comedy by Ron Hutchinson about how the most iconic film in Hollywood history almost did not get made. Directed by the renowned Stephanie A. Coltrane, this production features the same principal cast members from the critically acclaimed staging of Moonlight and Magnolias at the Hermosa Beach Playhouse in 2010.
3 weeks into the filming of Gone with the Wind, Atlanta has burned, Scarlett O'Hara has been cast, but there is no workable script, and the director has been fired. Legendary film producer David O. Selznick seemingly has the biggest white elephant in Hollywood on his hands, and only 5 days to save the troubled production from certain failure. Desperate, he brings in the formidable Victor Fleming to take over as director, and famed screenwriter Ben Hecht to rewrite the lackluster script. The only problem is Hecht hasn't read the book, and the clock is ticking. With the shades drawn, phone calls unanswered, and subsisting only on a diet of peanuts and bananas, Selznick and Fleming reenact scenes from the novel for Hecht to adapt into a screenplay that would become an epic Academy Award-winning film.
This enthralling show is now on stage at the Rubicon Theater in beautiful Ventura, California, with only 4 performances left starting tonight, September 15th, on this Thursday evening tonight, and closing Sunday, September 18th, this coming Sunday. All performances are at the Rubicon Theater at 1006 East Main in Ventura's downtown cultural district on the corner of Main and Laurel. For tickets, go to www.rubicontheater.org. That's RubiconTheatre.org, or call 805-667-2900.
Tickets are very, very affordable, ladies and gentlemen, from $25 to $54. Special pricing for students with ID is $20, and tickets for equity members and military are $25. Teachers are $30. There is a $5 discount for seniors 65 and older. There is an additional service fee that is added to all tickets, a minor fee. Regardless of point of purchase, do yourself a favor. Get out and see this production before it closes. And once again, for tickets, call 805-667-2900, Monday through Sunday, noon to 6 p.m., or visit, as Andrew just said, RubiconTheatre.com. rubicontheater.org.
I tell you, there's some great people in this show, and Rubicon does consistently high-caliber work out there in Ventura. It's a great trip. You go out there, you get dinner or lunch, and you go see a show there.
How long does it take to get to Ventura?
You know, it's not bad. I mean, depending on what time you go, of course, you're going to deal with traffic, but if you zip up the 101 and go over the Camarillo Grade from, say, Sherman Oaks, you can be there in 45 minutes, an hour, depending on how traffic goes and how fast one chooses to drive. I drive a lot slower these days, but it's interesting to watch how the Rubicon is kind of an oasis in that area. There's, of course, some other good groups doing work around there, but the Rubicon has been a stalwart. It's really done a great job. Stephanie, you'll see Joel Bryant in this cast, and Silas Brown, and I think, of course, you'll see Patrick Vest. Some really amazing people that we know fairly well and that do great, great work, all under the leadership of Stephanie Coltrane.
So. Yeah, who's one of my favorite ladies, actually.
She does a great director, and obviously a good person as well. She understands how to deliver comedy, as very few directors do, which I think we all know is so important in going to see a show these days. You want to have a good time.
Yes, sir.
Moonlight and Magnolias is certainly a chance to do that. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a Thousand Oaks native up there from near the area we're talking about,
full-time
member of the Los Angeles Master Chorale, and a graduate of the USC Thornton School of Music. Through music department there at Washington Adventist University, he was a soloist for international tours spanning five continents and was also one of four Virginia Best Adams Fellows for the Carmel Beach Festival during the summer of 2013. This past September, he made his musical theater debut as George Nowak.
Novak.
I think in the script it's got a W for some reason. Nowak.
No, that's the correct spelling.
That's the correct spelling.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But it's pronounced with the V?
Yes. It's Eastern European spelling.
Of course. Yeah. You know, I've never seen She Loves Me, which of course was a show that
you
did
show.
With Panic.
Yeah, I happened to see this production.
Yes. Interesting. Yes. I've never seen it. I've heard great things about it, though. Productions in Thousand Oaks, of course, with Panic have spanned for a number of years. He has also played Fred in the stage adaptation of A Christmas Carol with the Thousand Oaks Repertory Company. Recently, he made his debut with the Pacific Opera Project as Camille in the new adaptation of Merry Widow, and he joins us today to continue our conversation on this new project. Let's give it up for Mr. Brandon Loy. Welcome, Brandon.
Oh,
welcome, my friend.
That's two times in a row you guys have been sending screaming fans my way.
You know,
love
we do
it.
That for you, buddy. We're here for you. Hey, so I understand you took over Fred in A Christmas Carol from a guy who had it for 5 years. That must have been daunting.
Yeah, it was daunting because he was always giving me wonderful advice, and he's laughing about it right now because he was spot on about every single piece of advice.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brandon and I had the chance to work together in Christmas Carol this year, and I played Fred for a number of years and had a great time with that role.
I
tell you, this was fascinating to hear you sing that song in A Christmas Carol.
Oh, thank you.
You know, it adds such a dimension to Fred, and that company was so much fun. What was your experience like coming into a production that's been going for 20 years and stepping in to play such a big role?
There's so many things I could say about that because Alan Hunt is such a unique director. He is just one of the most chill individuals I've ever met. And so, I mean, you could have a hurricane going around him, and he'll be the calm eye in the storm.
That is so true.
And so in that regard, it was very helpful for me because it helped me to learn how to say my lines and calm down, mm-hmm. at least the beginning of it. And because that was my first time doing a straight theater show. Because usually as a singer and also as a former instrumentalist, I'm used to hiding behind my voice or hiding behind the music. And so with this, it was just a whole new different of exposure for me. And you and every single cast member were so generous. You guys made it so easy for me. You guys were so wonderful in respecting where I was at. And I just that's why I love each one of you guys. You guys are family to me. So it was just a really irreplaceable experience, and especially to do it in my hometown. I mean, you can't beat that. I mean, I grew up performing on that stage as a pianist.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just.
And where was the theater?
The beautiful Scheer Forum.
Oh, it was at the
Thousand Oaks Civic Arts
Plaza.
Yes, okay. Indeed.
And to perform for these rabble rousing kids, it was in the morning. It was just so worth it. What was that thing that they got upset about one day? They got they were they were like, oh, when I had to drop Kelly.
Right.
And she did this thing where she slaps her hand on the ground to add emphasis, to make it more real. And it was so loud and terrifying. The kids were yelling at me going, how dare you do that? How dare, what were you thinking? Why would you do such a thing? And this was like at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, I haven't even had coffee yet.
Yeah, our modern sensibility did not like the suggestion of very tongue-in-cheek spousal abuse, even in the slightest inclination there. So they stood up for people all across the country saying, no, sir, we do not joke about that. But
yeah,
it was
awesome.
Funny to watch, because I think you'll find this, of course, with your opera work too, with this amazing group, is that when you reach out to children, and of course so many groups do that now with part of their grant, which is what Thousand Oaks Repertory does, is they make sure that they put in shows that are specifically for children to come and see, mm-hmm. along with their professional run. And you perform for 400 screaming kids, some of whom have never been in a theater before.
Yep.
And I think very much like what we saw at the Amundsen last night, there is a generational knowledge that we pass down when we teach people to go to theater. And if we don't do that correctly, theater dies. And so it's fun to be a part of that, especially when their most loud and raucous reactions are on every kiss. And you realize how many kisses, and you've never felt so self-conscious about kissing somebody on stage. All of a sudden you're thinking, oh man, I hope I'm doing this right. So.
Well, not only that too, but in my opening scene, it was always my favorite with Ed Rouse, who is a fabulous Scrooge. And if you don't know who Ed Rouse is, or it's not Ed Rouse.
Ed Hall.
Ed Hall. He used to be the announcer for The Tonight Show, correct?
Good friend of the show.
Yeah, and he is just incredible. So I learned so much learning how to feed off of an actor to come up with how to react in the moment rather than just say my lines.
Yeah.
And so when I won up Scrooge, there was a few times where the kids would cheer and even clap. They're like, yeah, you know. It's just, I mean, you can't, to me, that's what live theater is about. When you have that kind of a personal reaction from the crowd, they're so invested in it, they're reacting, and they're being, and because they're being honest, I think it encourages the performance to always be honest. So that's why I love that kind of reaction when the kids are, you know, jiving away. And
agreed.
Yeah.
So is this production going to take place again this year?
In theory, I haven't heard yet, but we've been going for 20 straight years now. I've been with the production for 10, and I know Brandon stepped in last year and did an amazing job. So we're hopeful that that'll continue. Of course, under the direction of Alan Hunt, with the amazing Cindy Murray producing.
Yes.
So, yeah, and a good group
Cindy.
Of people in the cast.
But you were in the show anyway, weren't you? Or perhaps in a different role?
I was. I started off as young Ebenezer Scrooge and played that for 2 or 3 years, and then I jumped into Fred for 5 or 6 years, and then last year switched over to Bob Cratchit.
They fired
me once Brandon came along.
Actually, he was promoted. He's really the assistant director. I mean, he just while Alan keeps his zen in the calm of the storm. You know, he's telling us what to do, and he does it very mindfully too. I might add, he's got a real good knack for directing. So
nice of you to say. I certainly wouldn't put that title on me, because all I do is watch Alan and follow his lead. But it's a fun thing to watch. Is that you really see what theater is all about when you get to do those kind of programs.
Truly, truly.
Speaking of that. And what has been done with this beautiful opera that is going to go up over the weekend, in which Brandon is co-starring in,
mm-hmm.
how is this different by Mr. Thomas's perception? What has he done with this to make this different?
Well, I want to say he has made it different, but in many ways I think he hasn't. Because one of the stigmas that you have in opera is that there's not good acting. And so he's really made a big emphasis to make this a character-driven show. And I couldn't agree more with his choices, actually, especially with the staging. Because when you read the libretto, it's a very brilliant libretto. And during this time period in opera, Rossini was a transition composer, in my opinion, right before Donizetti and as the opera houses got bigger. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, a lot of the librettos were more about the character. They were more character-driven shows. And the singing really... articulates that in the most craziest, zaniest, most comical way possible. And so in many ways, I feel like he's bringing back... I just can't imagine people performing this music during Rossini's time and not being good actors.
Mm-hmm.
It just drives me nuts. And so in other words, acting and singing are not two separate entities. Mm-hmm. They're one and the same. And I think during that time period, especially when that was your style of music and that's all you were exposed to in that city, it's much easier, I think, to focus on that. Whereas in today, I think the expectations of performers is so demanding because... the internet has connected us all, so we're expected to be versatile, mm-hmm. especially in this country. And I don't think there are a lot of people that are teaching how to accomplish that successfully.
Very true.
So that's why I really agree with his direction. And he's staging it in the style of a Laurel and Hardy movie.
Really?
So it's very physical. So, and this is so appropriate because the music itself, it's like listening to 3 hours worth of Looney Tunes. And that's where these Looney Tunes composers got their style from this bel canto style, particularly from Rossini. It's manic, it's energetic, and never lets up, but it's also gorgeous and yet terrifying at the same time, like Galadriel from Lord of the Rings in a way. But with a comic twist, because I was telling this to Andrew before we started. What makes this difference from a musical theater show is that in a musical theater show, I used to be a long-distance runner, and I used to be able to run a mean one-mile run in like 5 minutes, no problem. And that was easy for me. And now, so in terms of pacing, it's very easy to pace yourself through a musical theater show in terms of the singing, especially. But when it comes to opera, especially a show like, even in operatic standards, a show like this is a triathlon. Mm. Not only do you have to think in another language for 3 hours, but you have to sing the most gymnastic, intensely crazy, florid music on the face of the planet. Mm. You should hear the instrumentalists, because when you get a compliment from an instrumentalist, you know you're doing something right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were coming up to all of us and going, "You guys are amazing. How are you guys not tired? How are you guys sustaining all those notes and being so accurate and at the same time bringing the life and the spirit to the music." I'm rambling because that's not easy to. It's not hard for me to do. But
well, no, this is obviously your passion about the subject,
right,
which is one of the things I love best about you. But this is something we should talk about a little bit. And then I think opera for years has had a stigma of you're going to go see something deep and dark with murders and tragedy.
Right.
This is a really funny show and world class singers with world class music behind them. This theme and this fun Cinderella story has a lot of comedy in it, doesn't it?
Oh, a ton.
Yeah.
A ton. And what they did with libretto really brilliantly is that they changed. I forget the name of the librettist, but instead of having a fairy godmother, let's put it this way, put it in context. Back in that time, you didn't have people codifying stories.
Mm-hmm.
So there were different versions of these fabled stories throughout the Europe, and this is a great example of that. So instead of a fairy godmother, you have a wise teacher who's my teacher. So even though the story's about Cinderella, and sorry, Hannah, who plays Cinderella, it's in some ways it's more about my character, the Prince Ramiro.
Wow.
Because he has to get married in order to become king. And so his wise teacher tells him, "Listen, you need to go to this house, and one of the sisters there is the woman for you, like a prophet, so to speak." And long story short, instead of an evil stepmother, you have an evil stepfather, which is played. What's Igor's last name again?
Vieira.
Vieira, who
he's brilliant.
He's genius. Now he's done the role before, and it really shows. And
he's very funny.
He steals the show, especially. And what's really crazy about a show like this, and it's actually very unusual, even in operatic standards, is that everybody has an equally different part, just for very different reasons. And the last thing I will add to that, what makes this show so unique, in my personal opinion, this is the kind of show that really shows what opera was originally about.
Yeah.
Because let me expound a little bit on the stigmas. One of the reasons we have these stigmas is because after Rossini and after Donizetti and even after Verdi and stuff like that, we had Wagner. And as the progression of these opera composers were going, the opera houses were getting much bigger and much bigger, and the orchestras were getting significantly bigger, especially by the time we got to Wagner. And that's where we get the stereotype of unusually enormously large people just barking and barking. And as a result, it's been both a wonderful thing and also a curse, because Wagner single-handedly challenged the limits of vocal singing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's taken us until now to finally learn how to coexist with that, so that way we can apply this to every other style of singing, so to speak.
Britney Spears challenged the vocal limits of my singing. I don't know if that's quite as prestigious, but it is true.
I will say, though, to be able to sing and dance like that at the same time, that is a whole other animal right there.
I happen to know that Britney Spears could not stand and dance like Britney. So.
And I think we're all grateful for that.
You know, what he's saying rings true, and also I think another part of the changing face of opera is that the opera stars themselves now have dramatically changed.
Absolutely.
Yes. Many of the men are sex symbols in that world.
Very hunks.
Yeah, very hunks. Exactly. Yeah. Right. and the women too.
Yeah.
So Audra McDonald is a perfect example.
Sure.
Of, you know, someone that was able to parlay her
right.
her vested interest in opera into musical theater.
No doubt about it.
In the proper type of musical theater that would suit her voice, and you know, become a television star on top of it. So
absolutely yeah. right, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about Center Stage Opera that performs down in Reseda in a beautiful space that's just been renovated. And tickets are amazingly affordable for this, $30 to $55 for a fully produced opera. That's virtually unheard of. Obviously, of great quality. Tickets are available at 818-517-4102, or you can just Google Center Stage Opera, and centerstageopera.org will pop up. So we encourage you to do that.
One question I have for Jerry. You mentioned in your earlier comments that you do opera, but also do Broadway shows.
Yes, we have, in fact...
Under the guise of this company?
Yes, Center Stage Opera. Mm-hmm. Dylan F. Thomas, our co-artistic director, he really began his career as a Broadway guy. Mm-hmm. He's appeared off-Broadway. He also was a teacher in rock theater. My own background, frankly, is fronting a rock band and playing keyboards.
Really?
And yeah, he has a fabulous voice.
I knew nothing
really?
About
fabulous
opera.
Voice.
But
Jerry?
And Jerry, too, and also Dylan.
And Dylan.
But Dylan is, yeah, an amazing singer. I play third backup when we do the pop and rock stuff. but no, we do a lot of things without the orchestra that are piano accompanied, or with our rock band called CSO Rocks. We've done a couple of benefits with the rock band where we play straight ahead classic rock,
right.
And we have in the planning stages something that a concert that we're going to hopefully produce called Classic Rock Classics That Rock, and it's going to take the two and put them together. So you may find Quando Menvo from Puccini. Maybe a line of that, and then suddenly it turns into Chuck Berry presents Quando Menvo.
Wow.
So it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's totally my kind of concert. Right
very
there.
Nice. Very interesting. Well, you've got your hands in everything.
No doubt.
Yeah, he really likes to underscore, what's the right word? He's a man of jack of all trades. I mean, this is a man after my own heart right here. He does everything, and he likes to play it down. That's what yeah. I was trying to say. And then this is a very talented man over here.
I have that sense.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
gentlemen, we have enjoyed you. Having you here today, but you are not done yet.
No, they're
friends.
Not. But I do want to give Jerry a chance to say something, because I think you want to say something, right? You keep looking down at your...
No.
Oh, we're good?
You're helping me say it.
Oh, okay. Very good. Well, that's our job.
Well, so. It is time here on State of the Arts for a little ritual we have that we surprise some of our guests with, and it's called...
And now, embarrassing moments.
Gentlemen, we have something we do here where our performers who come in here, we ask you to tell us something that's happened on some point in your live performing career, be it in music or be it on a stage in a show or even on a film set, that has been so embarrassing that you thought you might give it all up, but you decided to keep going. Something we all have to experience with. We've had a number of stories, something embarrassing that happened to you in front of a live audience or in front of cast and crew that really was mortifying and reminded us all that we're all in the same live performance family. Anybody have one that comes to mind?
Jerry, would you like to go first?
Why,
I've got a little bit
so
of a list.
Much, yeah. Well, actually, I've got a very long list.
Right.
But I actually sort of set myself up for embarrassment. I used to.
Exactly.
In another life, I used to write parody songs and just take usually a rock song and put different lyrics to it and so on. And one year I was inspired to put together a show called The Schlapremes.
Oh, God.
By the time this thing got done, I found myself in 3-inch heels that were women's size 11. I wear men's size 11, thank you. With a beehive hair wig, full makeup, and a considerably above the knee, hot pink sequined gown.
Oh, so my. Much like what you wore today.
not that far off, right?
Did you have a mustache?
Made by my wife, yes. And in fact, I kept my mustache. The woman who was singing with us, a wonderful singer, she said, And another gentleman, and he said, "I'm not getting my mustache." And I said, "Well, I'm not either." And she said, "Well, then I guess I'll have to put one on." So she did. It was only later when I saw the video that I realized just what a bad idea that was. Because I make the most hideous woman you have ever seen. A lot of fun, though.
That's a good one. Brandon, what do you have for us?
I definitely got a list as well, but the one that I come up that comes to mind is not necessarily the most embarrassing, but the most incredible. My first solo with the LA Master Chorale was 2010. Unbelievable. And it was my first Handel's Messiah, and I was the tenor solo. And
nice
was,
simple piece of music there.
Yeah, right. And it was for the Messiah sing along. So you have the entire audience singing the chorus
and they
parts,
know it all.
And they know it all. Oh, you should see it. You got groupies at this concert. It's awesome. And Grant is also very good with audiences like that. Grant Gershon, the conductor for the LA Master Chorale, and. I had gotten a bone bruise. Keep in mind, I'd never broken a bone in my body up until this point in my life. And a couple days before, I'd slipped and fell and landed on my rib very hard on a brick. And I had a huge bone bruise right here on my right rib. So that night, we were coming in from another concert with LA Master Chorale from Pomona. And it was like the one time where it rained like it was Seattle. And so the visibility was horrible. I couldn't see anything. And I'm driving, and I'm next to a baritone who's falling asleep and is somehow calm. And I'm like, how can you be calm at a time like this? We're going to our first Messiah sing-along. So I show up. I'm in this beautiful dressing room. And I dress up and everything. I'm like, okay, let's relax. Let's have a good time. And then they call my name. To call to the stage, and I stand up, and right when I stand up, crack! My right rib had a hairline fracture. I found out later.
Wow.
And so I was in so much pain, but I didn't have time to do anything about it, so I just went on stage. And I somehow sang an entire my first Messiah with a cracked rib. And I had so much adrenaline going that every time I would hear the orchestra come back in, I thought I was flat as a pancake. And I just said, oh my gosh, it's over. It's over. And every time I would try to move a little bit, there would be this enormous pain, obviously. And I couldn't breathe. I had to breathe in places that I've never breathed before.
Yeah.
And afterwards, Grant Gershon comes up to me with that childlike demeanor of his. He just comes up to me and just goes, "Brandon, you just hit that out of the ballpark." And I'm just thinking to myself, "I'm glad you thought so."
And so the audience is watching, thinking, "Boy, that man knows how to emote. Look at him; he has tears in his eyes."
Oh no, seriously. Even my father, who whenever I ask him, "What do you think of something?" If he likes something, he'll go, "Not bad."
Wow.
That's what he always says. So he came up to me and he said, "Brandon, that was the most beautiful singing you've ever done."
Mm.
And I'm just looking up at God, whether or not you believe in God. I said, "You're a sick puppy. You know that?" So.
But it was the wrong. It was the wrong oratorio. It should have been the creation.
Yeah, right.
Adam's rib.
Right. That's a good one.
What a great time today, guys. Thank you both
for
joining us.
Yes,
it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. We wish you wonderful success with
Absolutely.
This. Are we going to try to go see this?
I think we should if we can. Absolutely. It's this weekend, so we're going to have to make time for it. We've got busy weekends, obviously, ahead of us.
Two performances.
Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 3.
And again, that's the 17th and 18th. Audience, we'd greatly encourage you to go out. We've given you some great options to go see today, but certainly visit centerstageopera.org and check out this two performances only chance to go see a really great opera here in the Valley. We'd also encourage you to go down to the Amundsen the first chance you get and see a view from the bridge and certainly up to the Rubicon and see Moonlight and Magnolias, another great comedy that you'll certainly enjoy.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you, guys. Thank you, Andrew. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. I am Andrew David James.
I'm Michael Sterling.
Where will I see you?
Next week on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.